Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to the podcast. It's me. I'm in a mood today. I'm in a little bit of a mood, but I'm also in a very good mood, and you'll understand why. I want to say something first. If you are used to my positive, fun, happy-go-lucky self, continue to listen, but my brother today that's on with us, who I've been telling you guys about, we might talk about some fucked up shit. So I already started with bad words, so it's up to you now if you want to listen. I've been telling you guys about my brother, my no shit brother, a personal hero of mine, someone who has had a life probably as fucking wild as mine, so I think that's why we mesh so much. My brother Carlos Gomez Perez, what's up, cuz?
What's up, man? How you doing, bro?
Not too bad. Thanks for being on your phone with me. I can't get you from Cali all the time, but I'm glad to be able to talk to you through the Bluetooth thing that I got figured out.
Yeah, I'm glad you freaking came up and actually decided to keep up with technology, bro.
I know.
That's a plus.
Well, so I still got to get with you on some video stuff because I want to try. I just uploaded a video of Cash shooting his rifle this weekend, and I don't know what happened. I don't know what happens after that, but you got to help me.
Sick. I think the best one to reach out for that would be my son, man. You know, he fucking.
I know. You're right.
Techier than me.
Yeah, he got me all set up in the first place. Sometimes, man, fuck parenting. That's how I'm starting this shit off. Fuck parenting sometimes. Dude, yep. You got one who's just attitude, and it's just weird to relate to a 13-year-old girl. Cash, he does this thing like everybody else where it's this ebbs and flows and ups and downs. He'll have all of his grades, all of his work turned in, straight A's, all the praise in the world. Good job, brother. Now let's just not get back into that hole. Let's stay up on top of the motherfucker, and then we don't have to dig out all the time, right? If you need help with homework, there's A+ volunteers at school. Alicia's really smart. I can Google, you know, but let's just not get down in the hole again to where we got to dig ourselves out. And then Savvy, you know, she's got her stuff going on, and you know, she's turning 12, and who knows whether it's a combination of girl stuff or just she's too much like her fucking father, but you know, she's the one that gets in her own way, and when things don't go her way, she shuts down, and that hurts my feelings because I know she's capable of so much. But it's just like, you know how those weeks go when everything's great, you and the wife are clicking, you and the kids are clicking, everybody's having fun, and then there's those weeks when everybody's just a motherfucker and you don't want to like deal with any of it. Oh, maybe.
I know that 1,000%.
Oh, maybe not. Maybe not in your fucking house.
Oh no, that's what we need to discuss.
That's where we need to go. Okay, let's do it.
Yeah, because remember the first time that I went to your house, I told you about it, man. I told you, man, bro, I fucking look up to you. How you fucking are raising your kids? You talk to them in all nicely. You're there for them, and you're like, bro, I was only putting a show for you, man, because I was fucking pulling my hair out, even though I had no hair back then.
Yeah.
But what I'm trying to say though, man, is like, honestly, you have an external variable that I know probably your listeners have talked about this before or even listened to this, but your variable is the fact that it's not just you and Alicia dealing with it, you know? So that's also another variable that you may want to consider. Like, it's not you, you're not the problem. Your kids are not the problem. It's the external variable that unfortunately is going to be there for them for the rest of their life.
What? Being a fucking weirdo?
No, not you.
What is the external variable?
The mom.
Oh.
The mom, the actual mom. That's what I'm talking about.
I'd like to blame her, dude. But you know, I all this. When they're here, they're fucking different people. I hear what you're saying. I'm with you. But it's like, this is like the fundamental stuff. It's like, you guys know when practice is. Have your shit ready. Why do I guess, is this just kids being kids? Are kids supposed to know? Well, I guess if maybe you didn't come in and get right on your fucking phone or your game, and that's our fault too. We let that happen, right? So, but there's just all that stuff when it's like, dude, why are things so off this week or these couple days or whatever, you know? It just takes the life out of you sometimes. I'm like, fuck me.
It, It does, man. But you also have to take into consideration one thing. What has changed? And I get it. This happens every week. This happens every day, right?
Right.
But what was different in the last 2 weeks? Well, there was one variable that was very different.
I see.
You're not the only one.
Yeah, I see.
You're not
what
the
you're
only
saying.
One feeling it.
Yeah.
You're not the only one feeling it. We're all feeling it. You know? So you coming out here, seeing the guys, the reunion, yes, you're fucking all pumped up. You fucking feel great. But then we fall. I can only tell you from my own fucking experience.
Yeah.
I was pissed as fuck, man. I'm gonna tell you the truth. I was at the reunion, I was having fun, whatever, but the little things were fucking pissing me the fuck off.
What are you talking about? When you got home?
No. Well, at home, I went to go order a fucking burrito. Oh. The motherfucker was taking forever.
Right.
And that alone was pissing me off.
Right.
Basically, I fell back into the scenario of having unrealistic set or high expectations of everybody around.
Yeah.
Hey, motherfucker, work faster.
Yeah.
Hey, why aren't you doing your work? Hey, why aren't you waking the fuck on time? And yeah, I got another lie. I'm like, hey, I woke you up fucking 30 minutes ago. Why the fuck aren't you awake?
Yeah.
You know? But this, that base, even though it was as good as it was, and we healed, we did it, we still fell back to the guy we were back in the core.
Yeah.
See, well, so little things that happen every day in your life really upset you because you're back in that mindset. Unknowingly, you're back in that mindset.
I can't disagree with it. Well, I talked to another brother of ours, and he went home and fell into a slump. And we were talking about this yesterday. I don't want to say his name, but I was just saying, you know, dude, we were on such a high. And then you go back home, much like when you got out, you go back home to this just kind of monotony. And my life isn't terrible. I love my life. I love my kids, of course, and all right. That bullshit. But it's like, it's just fucking, you know, you come off of this high. And he was saying he went home too and was just kind of just drinking a little too much. And, you know, he felt himself slipping. So he had to catch a hold of himself and go, all right, that's enough for a while, you know, which I'm proud of him for. But
which is one thing that alone attests the fact that he has grown. Whoever the fuck the guy was, which I probably know who he was, has grown. But what I'm trying to say, though, is that, yes, that's what me and Leola and I had talked about. Like, you know what, man? The reunion is great, but let's give the guys 2 weeks. Then let's start reaching out. Hey, how are you doing? How are you coping? Because, like, when we had the last reunion last year, we talking to a lot of our guys were like, hey, how is your rating, your VA rating? Most of them are 0%. Why? Because, one, we believe we don't rate or deserve the rating. Someone else deserves it more than I do. So now, fast forward to now, meaning like this reunion. There was a 20th year reunion. It was a big one. One, people brought their families. That's a factor too.
Sure.
You know, two, some of us feel bad that our families couldn't come. So then we start freaking going harder on ourselves. By the end of the day, we all fall back into who we should, because it's a whole should statement, who I should be, how I should be. And that I heard it all the time. Samantha told me all the time, hey, JC's not a real Marine. Why the fuck are you treating him like a Marine? Because we have those expectations. You and I became, at one given time, team leaders to our guys. Therefore, how do we treat our boots? The way we treat the boots is the same way that we treat our kids when we got home.
Why?
Because we don't know how to disassociate or detach ourselves from those standards. Hey, prime example, and I don't know if I can say from my point of view, but I don't know if you can agree with me or not. You showing up to school 5 minutes late, is that going to be the end of the world? No, it's not. But guess what? We have our fucking expectations. Like, motherfucker, you better be there 50 minutes prior, practice, school, whatever.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to have an off day. And if you're having an off day, you're a fucking shitbird. You know?
Yeah.
So that's what I'm talking about, man. We go back into the same fucking mindset of like, hey, go, 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 go. And we shouldn't. Nearly, hey, I am sorry. Literally, we're the wrong two. Yes, I get it. We have expectations for our kids because you're right. We know they can do better. They're also allowed to have 15 bad fucking days, bad weeks. And you're right. When they fucking shut down, especially teenage girls, let's be honest. When they shut down, you feel like shit. And then you feel like, I do it. I'm like, hey, tell me what the fuck's going on right fucking now. Or stop fucking moping around.
Yeah.
You have two choices.
Yep.
Unfortunately, we can't be like that with them. We can't be like that with boys either. But that's what we do. Because that's what we fucking know. And that's how we grew up.
Yeah.
Like me. My mom used to tell me, you have two fucking jobs. Either you're angry, guess what? Get fucking happy again. That's your fucking job. She wasn't around telling me, hey, you know what? Let's talk about it. What's going on? No. You get two jobs. You get mad, get happy. Plain and simple. However long it takes you, it's your fucking protocol. But I don't want to hear about it. You know, she never said she didn't want to hear about it. She just was never open to hearing about it.
Yeah, right.
You know? So what? Now we all of us that grew up to some degree in a dysfunctional home, whichever would be only one parent, drug addiction, poverty, illegal, whatever your dysfunctional family was, that got reinforced in the military. Like, oh, I feel like shit, good. Suck it the fuck out, get some sand and go. Roger that. I know how to do that. Let's go.
Yeah.
So we come back and the situations happen at home. We come back from like you said it, we come back from a high. And Leola asked me, how you feel? I'm like, I feel fine. I'm okay. But I wasn't okay. I was angry. Little fucking scenarios, little situations. I can understand, like, before we got on the call, I was telling you what I was doing. I was basically, I went to approach cordially an individual that aggressed me yesterday who was literally trying to intimidate me. And yeah, I'm not going to say he was a small guy. No, he's probably one of the biggest guys that if I had to encounter, he probably was. He makes, no one knows who Kosai is, but you and I know Kosai. This guy makes Kosai look small.
I gotcha.
That's the guy that I was encountering. And actually, I approached him like, good. But I know if it would have been 2 weeks ago and this would have happened, I would have been in jail already.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying I would have won. But I would have been in jail because I would have started some confrontation.
Right.
And it wouldn't have ended well. You know, so everything you're feeling about parenting, and like I said, the very biggest variable, yes, you haven't. You have a third person that you can't, you have no way of making her follow your guidelines and your expectations for the kids.
I have no control.
Home, exactly. But when your kids come home, not, you got to realize that too. Man. You have to give them grace. Like, hey, I've been with my mom for the last week. I can do whatever I fucking want. But then you come back home and you're like, yeah, well, you're in my household now. You got to follow certain guidelines. So they have to acclimatize themselves to you as well. And then the biggest variable, as much as we love fucking what happened a few weeks ago, you're still in that fucking mindset. You know, so we don't account for that. We don't address that fact that, like we said it, the reunion is perfect for 4 days. Why? And we saw it last year, we saw this. The first day back, man, especially for you, and you didn't see anyone in a long time. All of us, we all turn back to a fucking 20-year-old kid again the first night.
Right.
Yes or no?
Yep.
We're like, oh my God, man. Like, so the highs, I'm like, fuck yeah, you know, I can do something I just knew back 20 years ago. Second day, shit starts coming back. This time around, not now that happened because families were around.
Yeah, right.
If you remember last reunion to this reunion was different because it was more mellow. Families were around. The bar didn't get too crazy either. Even then, we don't get as crazy as we used to.
Yeah, yeah, it was good.
Right, it was a good environment. What I'm trying to say, though, is that we get together and we do it. We get together and we talk about scenarios that needed to be addressed. Not to remember the past in a bad way, but just to offload, right?
Yeah.
And then you go sleep that night, maybe, and most of us did last year, none of us went to sleep, or some of us didn't go to sleep. But guess what? You wake up the third day, you're still there with your boys. You get a chance to decompress, release. Okay, I'm still good. Then we get to leave the fourth day. That's where the 4 days is a great amount of time to, like, hey, now I can go home. And you felt it. Last year, you're like, I'm ready to go home now.
Yeah.
You were ready to go home on the third day.
Yeah.
You know? But
ladies and gentlemen,
you haven't been.
Ladies and gentlemen, Carlos is also my therapist too.
I'm not a therapist, man.
You make it make sense, but I don't want to make it make sense. I just want you to fix it. Press the button, please. I need you to press the button that makes it all go away.
And see, the only other option would be like, hey, fuck reunions. I'm never gonna go back to them again. But then, if you never go back to them again, what justice are you doing yourself?
Oh no, that's not even an option. Yeah, for sure.
No. I'm not saying that's your case.
Right.
I'm not saying that's my case either. I'm just saying that that's you're right. We go home and our wives are like, "What's wrong with you?" And we're like, "Nothing. Nothing's wrong." Because we don't understand it. We don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
We just have this feeling inside of, I'm gonna say it, fucking rage.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have rage. I'm like, I'm this fucking close to snapping your fucking neck. Like right now, when I left the guy, I hadn't felt like this in so long. I literally left. When I called you before you freaking turned on the mic, I was breathing hard. I felt fire in my chest, and it felt good, man.
I'm like,
oh my God, it's been so many fucking years to have not allowed myself to do this. But I'm like, I'm in front of my daughter's school. I cannot act out when I want
to
act out.
Right. I had to take myself out of the situation yesterday because, like, I'm trying to help Savvy with homework. We were doing fine. And then it gets to this point where I'm trying to help and you're now, like, disengaging. And it's like, if I'm spending my time to help, and Savvy does have some dyslexia and stuff, so she needs a little extra help. But I am familiar with what that extra help looks like. I'm familiar with when Savvy shuts down. I'm familiar with when she disengages, right? So it's not just me jumping off the handle, which of course I do, but I was in a very good mood when she got home. I said, "Hey, let's just get your work done. You got practice tonight, blah, blah, blah. Let's just get it done now. We're both going." And okay, so she's probably a little bit tired. I didn't take that in consideration because I got to work out, get my chores done, and have a nap yesterday while she was at school, right? So I didn't take any of this in consideration, motherfucker. And then as I see her start disengaging, I'm like, "Look, dude, we don't have a lot of time to do this. We've got a big packet to do. Savvy needs a lot of extra help." So it's kind of like you have to walk her through it a little bit, you know, and which is fine. But It got to a point where I started losing my patience. And then I had to take myself away from the situation. And then she was losing her shit. And I'm like, "Alicia, handle this." And she's like, "Babe, she might be going through some stuff, you know." And I'm like, "Oh, I get it, but we got to get this done." And then, you know, now she doesn't want to go to practice. But she's got to go to practice, and then she's got to get this homework done, or else she'll have a missing assignment. And so then I get fucking manic, and everything. Just nothing. No one responds well to me when I act that way. So I think to myself, get yourself out of the situation. So I went to go for a run. It's like it was cold yesterday, so I'm like, "Good, you need to get sick again, stupid." So I come home, go downstairs, get a second workout of the day, and just taking out frustration. And like, I think I know that that's healthier than yelling and acting like an idiot, where no one's listening to me anyways. But it's like, why does it have to get there? You know, just fucking let's do your homework. But I want to end this by saying we both took a break. We both came back around and we got the homework done.
Okay.
Now ask me what you want.
What I was trying to say. Okay. So now put yourself in her shoes real fast.
No.
Right. No. I'm just saying, put yourself in her shoes real fast. You're the daughter. You're struggling. Your dad is losing his fucking temper, and he gets so fucking mad that even though he's not yelling, your appearance alone, you're an intimidating guy, man. We talked about this last year. Like, I used to be fucking afraid of you back then, you know, like, "Oh my God, my fuck is actually my ass."
Whatever.
But what I'm trying to say, though, is that we don't account to the fact that our physical mannerisms could sometimes be worse than our fucking voice yelling.
You're very right.
So what I'm saying, though, put yourself in her shoes, like, "Oh, shit, my dad disappointed me. I'm letting him down." So now she's putting more stress on her. Even though you're not saying the words, "I'm letting him, that you're letting me down, you're disappointing to me," that's where she's going. And then you react in the way you react. Yes, you're right. Best scenario, get me the fuck out. But now you're pounding her off on Alicia. So
Alicia was still working. I'm kidding.
When it says, like, "I'm so much of a disappointment that my dad can't fucking handle me. And now he's got to go work out because I stressed him out so much and I let him down. So he used to go just relieve some steam and come back and fucking start running like a fucking madman because I need to go fucking punish myself."
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But if we were to fucking stop a little bit and you say, "Okay, afterwards you came back, you both took a break." Did you address the fact that you left? Did you address the fact, like, "Hey, Mija, you know what? Sorry the way I reacted. It wasn't that cool. What's going on? How can I help you better?"
I didn't do it as good as I should have. But we've done this a handful of times, and we talk about it.
I know it's not the first time.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm saying because of me. I do the same thing.
Right. No, I got you. I also had to talk to her about, like getting in her own way. Her and I are very good at that. When you know, we will definitely both internalize and then get in our own way and talk ourselves out of doing the things we know we need to be doing. And I know my daughter, and she's good at that. If she doesn't feel like going to practice, all of a sudden she doesn't feel good. And you can kind of, all these things are very, there's a lot of markers. And you go, Sav, we got to go to practice tonight, honey. Your coach is taking attendance, and who doesn't come to practice doesn't play. And so it's like, mm-hmm. at the beginning of the season, do you really want to play club soccer again? It's a lot of demand. It's 3 times a week or 2 times a week or whatever it is. Yeah, right. this is all I want to do. Okay, roger that. My job is to financially support you and get you to practice and games on time. I got it. Don't worry about that part. Alicia and I both, our jobs. But you also have to keep up your grades. You got to be ready, meaning you got to have your laundry. You know what I mean? It takes a lot to run a family of five, and Alicia and I just can't do it all. And you know, they understand it, but it's like, I guess they're just being kids, and I'm sure I wasn't fucking standing at the front door 15 minutes early waiting to leave when I was a kid either. So I'm just an idiot.
No. Like I said, you just literally fell back into the, after going to therapy last year, that's one of the biggest things I learned about myself. Yeah. I had this really set or high unrealistic, because they're fucking unrealistic expectations on myself and others, and civilians, especially in our kids. Because why? Because when we're in the military, our fucking expectations were, for us, was norm. So now you come out, you see our work all the time. You have told me about your work, and like, this motherfucker showing up late. Like, okay, you're a supervisor, and you get all fucking stressed out and angry about the fact that, guess what? You can't let him go because you're not in charge of him to the point that you can fire him. So now you're getting onerous because now you're like, getting mad every day because he's showing up late. He's not working as hard as you expecting him to work.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what we fall back into. And like I said, the biggest variable that you got considering now is that, yes, you came back and you went back home. And you mentioned it. You came back high. You feel fucking good. And you already mentioned someone else.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that if you're going through it, the other guy was going through it. I went through it. That means that all of us are going through it. But guess what? No one fucking talks about it.
Right.
They just say, oh my God, I missed you guys. It was fucking awesome. Okay, why did you miss us? Why are you missing? Why aren't you fucking literally in the moment at home? Like, what's behind it?
Yep.
You know? But no one, like I said, no one addresses it because we're not supposed to. We're supposed to be okay.
You know? Yeah. I just, you know, it's one of those deals. You just wish you were better.
Yeah.
And then things are a lot better.
And you start punishing yourself if you're questioning, you're like, I'm a shitbag, and literally the should statements, and or you go into the yeah but statement.
Right.
I walked away and worked out, yeah, but hey, that's a win. You fucking grew. You weren't there fucking literally tearing her face out with fucking knife hand. Well, you literally said, I need to step, you see what I'm saying?
And as you well know, and anybody listening knows, I'm the guy who wanted my dad to be around. So now these kids have a dad who is around, but it sometimes if the wind blows the wrong direction, he can fucking weird out a little bit. Or if I'm not da 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 da, you know. So it's one of those things. All right, let's switch off of therapy talk, please, because I feel way better now. No, but I wanted to talk to you about some other stuff.
Okay.
So other than, let's just do the, reunion real quick. Other than what we just talked about, good times.
The reunion was good. The reunion was good. I think a lot of people, and I gave it a few conversations that we had, because I was jumping around. I was jumping around different people that, were platoons, because I just knew them because they were SOI.
Yeah.
But also being doing that, also I missed out a lot of things. Like, I'm glad I jumped in when you and Wagner were having a private conversation. I'm glad I jumped in. But also feel like I was overstepping. I'm like, oh, you fucking be a mostly fucking little bitch. Get the fuck away. But I like hearing what he was saying and discussing and how you receptive you were. And so for me, I feel that there was things that needed to be said, that had to be said, and that were said in a manner that, like, hey, this helped out.
Oh, if anybody I wanted to be there, it was you. I mean, no, there's no such thing. You know how that goes. But I hear what you're saying, but yeah, there's no such thing as overstepping or whatever.
And like
did you see that little video that they put on Facebook?
Which one?
they made like a little short video of some of the
the one Leora put up yesterday.
Yeah, it was fucking
It was awesome. It was awesome.
Yeah, you and your daughter were on there.
I didn't see it. I didn't see that one.
As a matter of fact, that when I first talked to Wagner was on there too. It was pretty cool.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't see the part on the screen. I only saw one, but I think Leora told me that he took it down. And he put a new one up. So I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
And I did see the photo guy that was doing there, and Leora told me, yeah, he's gonna be doing interviews. I'm like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
I thought he was gonna be going around like, hey, can I talk to you? I didn't know people were gonna approach him and ask. So
yeah, he got scalped.
Yes, I saw Scalding. Fucking boot. me and Scalding were boot camp together.
I know. I
completely
remember that.
Forgot. Yeah, I remember.
Well, you told me we were boot camp together. I told a story. I don't know if it was on here or if I was just talking to somebody, but I think it was on here. But I don't know when. What the fuck was the last? It might have been the reunion one. I don't know. You know what? It was when I was talking to Leota. That's what it was. Yeah. I remember in boot camp walking by you as guides of the platoon, you know,
mm-hmm.
We were just walking by and I was telling him the story about how then we met up in SOI and all these years later, we had that conversation about like being intimidated by each other and stuff. And we were cracking up, but yeah, I remember seeing you and you were like this stocky little bulldog and I'm like, fuck, he's tougher than me, you know. I'm like, that motherfucker's bad. And then like we end up together in SOI, and I remember, and we've talked about this too a couple times, like I was kind of like, fuck that dude at first, you know. I you know how it is when you try to approach somebody, you don't know them and how they're, what they're up to and who they are and shit. And then so we put that off for a while, but then when we finally ended up just talking, I forgot what the situation was exactly, but we ended up just broing out right away. It was awesome.
The thing about, I don't remember a lot. So I was never in the now moment, and I haven't been in the now moment for a long time.
I hear you.
I'm trying to say though, there's a lot of things I don't remember about boot camp.
Yeah.
Do you even know why I became guide?
No.
I became guide because, me and Sam were already dating. We have been dating for almost 2 years.
Yeah.
And she was always irregular for guys that are fucking naive at this. Irregular means that your girlfriend or wife gets her periods every 3 fucking months. Just in case someone out there doesn't know what irregular means.
Right.
Well, so she was irregular, and
I'm sure she's gonna be stoked that you're telling this on a podcast.
Go ahead. So we thought she was pregnant. We took a birth control test and everything, and either it said negative or I wish it said negative. I can't remember.
Right.
So we're going to address it. Right? Because that's just happened. So then come around September 2001, her mom, my mother-in-law, decides to take it to the doctor. Samantha finds out that she's already 8 months pregnant.
Oh, wow.
And 8 months pregnant, she maybe gained 10 pounds from during the pregnancy.
Right.
Now, I knew she was pregnant, so I was already training to go to the Marine Corps. So who was my training partner? She was. We used to run 3 miles, go to the park, do the sit-ups. I used to do pull-ups. I used to bitch at her because she wasn't running fast enough, or I used to bitch at her because she wasn't doing enough sit-ups. Mind you, she's already fucking 5-6 months pregnant while I'm fucking training.
Yeah.
And still fucking.
Take it easy.
We didn't know none of this. We didn't have the idea. So now September 20th, around there, my mother-in-law takes to the doctor. Samantha calls me crying. At that time, I used to be a bank. I used to work at a bankruptcy court as a copy guy back in downtown. She calls me, tells me I'm pregnant. I'm like, what? I'm pregnant. So I go to the house. She's crying. Her mom's mad at me. And I'm like, what? I'm like, I ain't talk to you, Dad. She's like, what? I need to talk to you, Dad. I said, why am I asking you to? Happened to be that her dad was gonna get there the same day because her dad is a truck. Used to be a truck driver.
Yeah.
So he gets there and like I said, Samantha's so upset. She's from France. She doesn't know what the fuck to do. Her mom didn't know she was pregnant because since she was already of age, she could go to a doctor. She could go into the doctor by herself.
Mm-hmm.
Her dad gets there and I'm like, okay, I need to talk to him. So her dad comes in, goes to his bedroom. He's laying down with a beer in his hand, watching soccer. And then I can't talk to you. He's like, yeah, he doesn't look at me. I'm a little fucking kid. I'm fucking 18, 17. Right.
What do you want?
He looks, yeah, exactly. So that's what you want. And then he's like, I'm like, I need to talk to you. He's like, okay. So before I could even say anything, before any words, besides the fact I need to talk to you, come out, he's watching soccer and it goes to commercial. And I can't even fucking, you can't write this. You can't even imagine this.
Mm-hmm.
The next commercial, the past two commercials, the commercial that pops up is 99.9% of all pregnancies are unexpected.
Hello.
That's literally the fucking commercial that came up. And I'm looking at a commercial. I'm like, this is fucking great.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Soccer comes up again. Yeah, I want to talk to you. Samantha's pregnant. He looks at me. He's like, I know she is. I'm like, huh? So there, I disappointed him. And then my mother-in-law comes into the fucking bedroom. And she's like, what's going on? And my father-in-law, she's looking at soccer. His daughter's pregnant. Oh my God. I got called the worst names. Like, you ruined her life. I knew she should have never fucking dated you. You're good for nothing. Blah, blah, blah. Everything.
Just all in Spanish. Like, and you just have to stand there and take it.
Exactly. I'm like, okay. Yes, yes, yes. I leave. I leave. And I'm not a religious guy. I stopped being a religious guy a long fucking time. But now she's already fucking eight months pregnant. Because even the nurse told her that even if you want to do anything about it, you can't. You're 8 weeks pregnant.
8 months.
I mean, sorry, 8 months.
Yeah,
pregnant.
Right.
8 months pregnant. How the fuck did you not know? She's like, I don't know. I just didn't know.
Because those Mexicans know, dude.
Yeah. So I leave there. Like, I ride. At that time, I rode a bike. So I was riding a bike. I rode a bike all the way to the end sidewalk, East County. And I fucking throw the bike in front of the church. I'm kneeling in the fucking sidewalk in front of the church, crying. I'm crying, fucking. All I'm saying is that, you know what? If she is pregnant, just eight months pregnant, anyone that knows somebody that are pregnant, they have to fucking be having checkups every month, every 2 weeks. If it's high risk, it needs to be every week. None of that happened. No vitamins for prenatal vitamins.
Yeah, right.
Were taken. So now I'm worried. Now I'm fucking worried. I'm like, she's got to be born in a month. Like, I'm crying in front of the church at fucking like 9 o'clock at night. Became just sobbing on my knees, like, please make sure he's healthy. He's, you don't know what it was.
Yeah, right.
Your girl.
Right.
Right. So that happens. Finally, we start going to our doctors, and they're like, yeah. So my son was supposed to be born October 21st. I was already scheduled to leave to the Marine Corps October 9th. So I went to the Marines literally like end of September, and I'm like, I'm not going. They're like, what? I am not going to boot camp. They're like, why? My son's gonna be born this day. I can't miss it. I need to be there. Like, well, we can't stop boot camp. You need to go. I'm like, no, I'm not going. Like, oh, but we already did all this paperwork and money. Like, I'm like, I just can't. I need to be there. Like, well, what do you think about the guys that are deployed? You know, they miss their childbirth all the time. Like, yeah, but I'm not those guys. Fast forward 2 weeks from the time we found out she was pregnant, my son's born. So my son was born October 1st, 2001. So I went from, we both went from being told you gotta be parents, like, hey, by the way, 14 days later, you're a fucking parent now.
Wow.
I'm like, okay, like, it didn't even hurt. Like, she started having contractions over the weekend.
Yeah.
And I was gonna drop her off at school at San Diego State on Monday, and we took the bus from home. I didn't have a car. We took the bus from home, went to San Diego State. We're sitting there in the quad, and we're seeing the big ass fucking clock at San Diego State ticking away. And she's having contractions. It's like, timing. I'm like, timing? What the fuck are you? Because we didn't take any classes. Like, so I'm timing, and the contractions at that time were 5 minutes away. I'm like, okay, I think we can go. So we took the bus back to El Cajon, told my mother-in-law, hey, we're at the bus station. Can you pick us up? She left work, came to pick us up, took us to the doctors. My son ended up being born 12 hours later.
Wow.
So now it's October 1st. My son's born October 1st. Just do a test of what kind of woman Samantha is, how much of a fucking badass she is.
Fucking right.
She went back to school October 3rd.
Dude.
She was back in school. She was back in school October 3rd. Missed the fucking test. The teacher's like, you missed the test. She said, yeah, I was giving birth. No, you weren't. She gives you the note. happened to be nursing, and the nurse like, "What the fuck are you doing here?
Bitch, I will bring my baby to this classroom."
He's like, "Why are you doing here?" She's like, "You're supposed to be resting." "Yeah, but I don't have a choice to rest. I can't. Like, I cannot miss more school because then I won't be able to graduate."
You never in your life heard of a white lady going to fucking school 2 days after she had a baby.
Yeah. So she's there.
You people are stronger than we are.
October 4th, we get married. So my son's born October 1st. October 4th, I'm getting married. Now I'm like, whoa, my son's born. Have no future. Have no job. Mind you, at that time, 2001, I was making $12 an hour at a fucking bankruptcy court.
Yeah.
If I would have been smarter, that was pretty fucking good money back 4 years ago.
Not bad.
But I didn't know that. So I'm like, okay. So I went back to the Marine Corps. I'm like, okay, I will go. Back to my father-in-law. I'm like, okay, I will be going to the Marine Corps because I had no other solution. I didn't know any other solution at the time.
Right.
So October 9th comes around. The recruiter comes to pick me up at 10 o'clock in the morning. Samantha's crying. She's pumping her breast. My son's crying. And now I'm fucking crying.
She's going to love that you said that too.
Yeah. And I had to survive. I had to survive October 9th, 2001.
Wow. Yeah, and then... go ahead.
In the span of 2 weeks, our life changed forever.
Yeah.
You know, like
baby, marriage, no military. Yeah.
Baby, marriage. So now I'm in boot camp. The point I was going to, where I became guide.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, and this has happened this weekend. I went to go reunite with the golf company was here last weekend.
Right.
Most of the guys from golf company I know because of boot camp.
Mm-hmm.
Reyes, one of the guys that was there, we were talking. He's like, "Bro, I remember meeting you in boot camp. Like, did you?" Like, "Yeah." Like, "Really, we're formation about to get a fucking head shape. And you asked me if I spoke Spanish. And I said yes. And you asked me where I was at, where I was from. And I told you LA. You told me San Diego. And then you told me that your son was born 8 days ago. I'm like, I told you guys, like, yeah, you fucking did. And I was like, what the fuck are you doing here? I'm like, well, I enlisted, so I had no choice. Needless to say, for anyone out there that decides to join, we have choices.
Yeah.
There's plenty of choices. And we can address that later.
Yeah.
But so now I'm in boot camp. I'm maybe 2-3 weeks in. I get a Dear John letter sent to me. People that know, I didn't know what the fucking Dear John letter was. I didn't know what the fuck that meant. Basically, I don't want to be with you anymore.
I'm
done with you.
They made a movie about it.
Yeah. I didn't know that. So she sent me a letter, but this time we're both young. Like in 18 years of age, young kids, he's into postpartum depression.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you say it, right?
Yeah, folks, he speaks great English.
Exactly, I do. Man.
We're going to have a translation for this.
Perfect. Subtitles. Subtitles work great.
Fuck you. Go ahead.
So, she was going through
postpartum,
that, so letter.
Postpartum depression. Yeah.
Yes, thank you for enunciating for me.
You're welcome, my brown friend.
So she sends me the letter. Send me the letter. I'm in boot camp. I get the letter. We get our mail call at night. I cry the whole night.
Sure.
There in the fucking rack with my fucking moonbeam, the flashlight they gave us, the moonbeam.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm reading the letter, reading it over and over and crying and crying. And wake up in the morning, next day is PFT. So we're marching to fucking to go out to a PFT, and since I'm so tall, I'm telling Charlie, yeah. Of course, I'm you know?
Yeah.
So I'm marching, and we're marching by some guys that are doing sit-ups. I look to my right, and I see them doing sit-ups, so all I can do is now I'm crying. I'm crying in formation. I'm crying as a fucking recruit in a fucking formation in PT.
Yeah.
The drill instructor comes around, and he looks at me, and I'm fucking bawling. Like, literally, I'm tears running down, shaking. He's like, "What the fuck's wrong with you, recruit?" And now all I could say is that this recruit misses his wife. I said, "What?" Like, this recruit misses his wife. He grabs me by the fucking shirt, takes me to the fucking front. He's like, "Hey, this is recruit Rosales, 4 squad leader. And I'm like, and I'm still crying. Everybody's looking at, all the recruits are looking at me all fucking weird.
You're like, "What's up, dude?"
They're like, And they're like, can you do this shot? I'm like, huh? Yep. They're like, can you do this shot? I'm like, what do you mean can I do this job? Can you be a force squad leader? I'm like, yeah.
I don't know.
He gets fired. Yep, exactly. He gets fired. I'm become force squad leader. And I'm still fucking crying their information fucking well before we start a PFT. Translation, now force squad leader. A couple weeks later, the guy gets fired and I became guide. I became guide, one, because the fact that I was loud and to follow orders. And I guess I was crying. And that alone made me stand out.
No recruiter has ever told a poolie or a recruit that that's the key to fucking victory in boot camp. Listen, dude, all you got to do is go in there and cry like a bitch and they will give you a promotion.
Yes.
Did you graduate, guy?
No, I'm going to go to that.
Okay.
I was, okay, you saw me in boot camp. You know, I'm in a lot better shape then than I was now. But even then, boot camp, the way that I was in, I was still a fabric crew.
Yeah.
I was literally labeled as a fabric crew. So everywhere I went, I had the fucking white stripes across my chest.
Yeah, that's
like, hey, you're a fucking fabric crew.
The fat body.
But how does this fabric crew can have a first cut PFT? It was a conundrum. They're like, that's not possible. This motherfucker shouldn't be running 19 minute 3 miles.
Right.
With his size. And he couldn't be doing freaking 120 sit-ups. He shouldn't be doing 18 pull-ups. Like, how the fuck does this fat recruit, fat body, do that? So I was the guide that was labeled as fat recruit. So I was, they're like, okay, this platoon is different because they have fat body as a fucking guide. Like, that doesn't add up. So I was scared the whole time in boot camp, especially when I was having to go up against the other guys, because in all reality, when a guy's supposed to be the epitome of the fucking man and as a guy. So I was like, man, I have to go up against these guys and they're fucking ruthless. I was shitting myself fucking every single time I would go up against them.
Oh yeah.
I don't know how to fight. I'm like, okay. But then when it came to body hardening, I was able to take body hardening hard. So that kind of stood me out a little bit, okay. I could take pain and I can deliver pain. So they would always move me around. Like if they wanted to make an example of someone, they would move me. Okay, I have Gomez so I can go out there with his legs. I'm okay. So I would buckle down guys down. Like, okay, that made me feel good.
Yeah.
So I got fired regarding a freaking question about if I graduated a guide. As a guide, no, I didn't. I did take the picture, the platoon picture from boot camp. I was there as the guide.
Me too, dude. Me too. So the way I see it, fuck you, I was guide of that platoon.
Exactly. So I didn't graduate guide because I joined the service for the wrong reasons. I didn't join the service to serve the flag. I didn't join the service because I want to be patriotic. I didn't serve the flag because of 9/11. I didn't join at all for any of those reasons. I didn't join to travel. I didn't. I only joined because they told me it was the hardest thing to do since anything.
Right.
So I'm like, well, I want to see if it's true. So it was my own personal challenge to see if it was true that the boot camp or Marine Corps boot camp was as difficult as everybody said it was.
Yeah.
So I was like, I used to play football. I used to do 2-a-days. I'm good.
Right.
So since I joined for the wrong reasons, I didn't care for anything else besides graduate.
Yeah, get home.
And I'm gonna get to that right now. So since I didn't care about anything, I didn't care about the crack up. I didn't care about history. I didn't care about Chesty Polar. I didn't care about none of it.
You're a shipper.
I was the fucking biggest fucking. I was the biggest shipper guide in the whole boot camp could ever have. So we're doing a fucking our 10K. We're doing a fucking our 10K, and I get asked basically the battalion. My senior drill instructor is next to me, and we're going at it. I'm not falling behind any hike. I'm doing good. And the battalion commander comes around. Well, what does a guide? Well, that's a father want to deal with a kid. They always want to show off the kids. That's how we were. We were for the senior drill instructor. We were the kids.
Right.
He wanted to show off his guide.
Yeah.
This is my guide. I'm gonna show him off. He's like, okay. He's just asking me about questions. Who was just the caller? How many Marine Corps bases we have in freaking California? He asked me about 4 questions, and every question that I answered, I don't know. After that second question, he's like, how about you say this recruit don't know, but we'll find out.
Yeah, no fucking shit.
After that said, yeah. After I said the same thing about 10 different times, this recruit don't know, but we'll find out, I was an embarrassment for him. So he proceeded to ask me, why the fuck should I keep you as a guide? And I answered, this recruit don't know, but
this recruit don't know, sir.
So I'm fired at the spot. I'm fired at the fucking 10K. I'm fired right there. Just take my fucking guide on, my freaking stripe, and get the fuck back to fucking telling Charlie, you're a disgrace now.
Yeah, get back your ass back there.
You fucking, yeah.
At least
ignorant shit.
At least you didn't do like the immigrant, I don't say, you know, like you fuck. He's like, bullshit. You fucking speak English and I know it. Dude, mine was the guy who, you know, when you first get there, this guy was like 6'2", just like a jacked. He was like an older, he was like, do you remember those? I don't know if you had any of those guys like close to their 30s. I think back then 33 was the cutoff age. You couldn't go to boot camp after 33.
I had Greenlee. Greenlee was fucking old, like 25.
Right. So our first guide was one of those dudes. He was tall, he was big, and he was older. So they were like, naturally, just you're the guy. But he didn't have... Right. He didn't have that fire thing. Like, he was real nice.
Yeah.
And he was like, hey, listen, everybody, you know, this is what we got. And like that, I just modeled myself after the drill instructor. I'm like, you know, it's like that thing.
Yep.
It's like that thing where dress for the job you want, not the job you have or whatever the thing is. So I just kind of like, they've told me to be fucking loud and fierce. So I was like, Roger that. And I was just loud and fucking fierce. So he was just real passive. He's a great guy, but he was real passive, and that's not what they're looking for. Like you said, they want to show you off, and when it comes time for platoon-on-platoon violence, they want you to be the motherfucker right in the middle of it. So I guess they just saw that. Well, the first night, we were outside the chow hall. The first, and then he, Masters, get up, and he gave it to me, and I had no clue what to do with the guide on. Like, it was a fucking mess, but we got back to the squad bay, and it was time for hygiene. So you're standing around in your stupid little butt towel and getting everybody ready to go. Well, he fucking kill and everybody went to take off. Well, I seen these dudes at the back of the squad bay, as they should, kind of fucking around and taking their time a little bit. And this was a few weeks in, so we all knew what we were supposed to be doing. I fucking take off running back there screaming like, let's fucking go, you know, and my butt towel came off, and I remember I had this split second where it was like stop and pick that thing up. Or fucking keep it moving. My little dinghy just flicking around everywhere. I kept it just rolling, dude. So I go running back to grab my little towel. And one of my drill instructors was like, don't fucking stop. And so I was like, all right, sir. And just so I just kind of, I mean, I was good to my guys. But I also just, because it all fell on us, right? If they fuck up, it's on me. Yep. And I remember they would fuck up and everybody sit down. Cross your legs, left over right. And they would fucking put their head in their hands and just watch me get tormented. Well, then the drill instructors would go in their duty hut and leave me alone with these motherfuckers. And I'm like, all right. So if I got to do it, you got to do it. But yeah, I remember on the pugil sticks, it was like the other guy to the other platoon I had to fight was like, he's a fucking giant. I'm like, Jesus, fuck, you know, but you can't show that. So I went at him and got the fuck beat out of me. But yeah, they fired me like a month out or something. I just wasn't good with the stick. It just wasn't my thing. I wasn't great at it. So they fired
me. The guide on?
Yeah, I was good enough at it in the squad bay practicing. But then when we would get out there, my fucking squad leader, I'm like, he wouldn't keep me in line. I'm like, dude, fucking, like, you know what I mean? Tell me if I'm fading off to the right or something. Get me back, which is my obligation. But I can't see fucking behind me. So I needed his help, you know, which we agreed upon. But the motherfucker, I think he wanted me to get fired so I couldn't smoke his ass anymore. But what are you gonna do?
So I go along to the lines of you being why you became guide, right? Once I became guide, our whole job is now to keep the fucking I didn't know at the time it was to keep the morale.
Yeah.
All I thought about, like you said, hey, get in there, get the shit done, fucking don't stop and go. So along the lines of, I have a similar story to what you freaking said about you dropping the towel. The biggest thing for me when it came to freaking guide was like, one, yes, you're right. If you're not responding, it's my responsibility, and I get fucking punished for it. So remember how we had to do the hygiene inspection every night?
Sure.
But before we did that, we showered, and after we showered, you as a guy had to bang the fucking wall.
Yeah, that piece of wood. Little paddle they
had. Yeah, piece of wood. You have to bang it as fast as you can, and then the arrow has to reside. Platoon, whatever, right?
Yeah.
So I banged it so hard that my hands started completely got red. They yelled. And then in the corner of my eye, I see. I still remember this so vividly, and I forgot their fucking name. Two Asian guys all the way at the end, the last freaking
rack.
What's it called? Rack. They're not screaming. They're not screaming at all. And I do it again. I see them again. I take off running from the top. Unlike you, I had no way to control my anger.
I literally jump up.
I jump up and I literally get him in a head hold and a choke hold, and I bring him down to the fucking floor, and I'm fucking choking the life out of him. I'm screaming at his face, get the fuck loud, get fucking loud. The guy there is like, what the fuck is wrong? I'm so angry that I just want to break his skull because my hand is hurting. I can't talk, and your stupid ass is making me do it over and over again.
Yeah, yeah. Because the drill instructors are in their little duty hut, and they're peeking out of those blinds, watching everything that's happening.
Exactly.
So they're like, this motherfucker's either going to address this situation, or we'll just sit in here all night. We don't give a fuck.
Yeah, so I can't believe I did that. It was wrong for me. I honestly feel I should apologize to him.
I know what you mean. It was a lot of pressure, even as a football player or a sports player myself. It was a lot of pressure to do. I think there was 87 of us or something. It's like, it's a lot of pressure to make sure everything's getting done right, or it's your fucking ass. I mean, that's pressure. So
when I changed my tactics, when I changed my way of being as a guide, remember when we had to do mess week?
Yeah. Well, I did because I was apparently
me neither, but. Now they don't do mess week anymore. So everybody out there has been to boot camp after we went. Mess week, basically, you work in the chajo for a whole week. So I'm working my guys because you get told an order, you follow to the freaking key, and you keep going.
Yeah.
So they see during a break, so we weren't serving dinner yet, and I see a table of freaking staff sergeants in the corner, and they see me talking to my guys the way I'm talking to them. Like a fucking asshole. Let's be honest. You became an asshole.
Sure.
And he pulls me over. He pulls me, the staff sergeant pulls me over. He's like, come here, recruit. Or come here, guy. And I'm like, okay. So I get up there and I'm fucking okay. And I'm all standing attention. He's like, at ease. Just relax. He's like, what are you doing? I'm like, this recruit. He's like, no, talk to me like a fucking human being. I'm like, oh, what?
I'm not a human
talk
being.
Talk to me like a normal. Exactly. He's like, what are you doing? I'm like, well, this recruit. Like, talk to me like a human being. I'm like, okay. I was told to do certain things, and that's the certain things need to get done in a timely manner. So I made sure my guys make it done in a timely manner. He's like, okay, I get it. I get it. You're a guy, and you need to get shit done. But why are you an asshole about it?
Because I'm doing what you motherfuckers do.
He's like, why are you being an asshole about it? I'm like, he's like, you think they respect you? Like, well, no, they might respect the fact you're a guy. But from what I'm seeing now, these guys fucking respect you.
Right.
They fear you because you're loud and you get hands on. But none of them have respect for you.
Right. Respect a man, it's not like, the rank type of thing.
Exactly. So they don't have respect for you. How about you change your ways, man? How about you freaking realize that, guess what? When you leave boot camp, when you graduate boot camp, this guy's not being in combat with you.
Yeah.
Like, if these guys are in combat with you, the way you're treating them, trust me. They will be the first ones to shoot you in the fucking back and laugh about it.
Yeah.
Is that what you want? I'm like, no. If you really want to be a leader, treat them like fucking human beings. And then they'll follow you to the end of the world.
Yeah, that's true.
That's what you want. You want them to respect you, not fear you.
Yeah.
That's why you should be. If you want to be a good guy, a good leader, right now, later on, not be their friend either, but respect them like human beings. Yeah. They are human beings. That deserve respect, treat them with the respect they deserve.
I agree.
So that's when I started changing. Like, oh, okay. That's what actually saved my life. And the reason I'm saying that is because I ain't found about this until I got to SOI School of Infantry. One of the guys that graduated with me in SOI, he's like, hey, Gomez, what's up? Remember you got fired? I'm like, yeah, I remember I got fired from God. I was your guy. Trust me, I sucked. He's like, you're so lucky you got fired. What do you mean? Like, you were an asshole, man. You were the biggest dick. You were more of a dick than the fucking drone strike. yeah, but that's what I was supposed to do. He's like, no, man. You were such a dick that we were so ready to throw a blanket party at you. I had never watched Full Metal Jacket. I never watched it until I was in the SWAT. I didn't know what a blanket party was.
Yeah.
I'm like, a blanket party? That sounds nice. Like, no, you don't get it. You never seen it. Somebody told me the movie. I'm like, no, I haven't.
Yeah, we were going to beat you with batteries and soap.
I'm like, what? It's like, yeah, man, we were so fucking pissed at how you were treating us that we were going to throw a blanket party. Literally. Wow. And then you got fired. So I'm like, oh.
We decided to let you live.
I'm like, oh, my God. And I told that to one of the guys this weekend. And he's like, bro, one, I didn't know that was going to happen. Two, I bet you anything. If that would have happened, they would have been like, all up, bro.
Yeah.
Because half of us liked you and half of us disliked you. So right. It would have been all us, bro. Like,
right, right.
And two, they were like, you were pretty strong, so I don't know that we'd have been able to fucking hold you down.
Yeah, I heard that.
So I don't know how.
Yeah, don't just fucking think you're going to get away with this shit. Hey, can we switch gears for a minute?
Go ahead, man.
I want, will you tell me the story about how you came over here as a kid to America? So where were you born? Mexico City, right?
So I was born in Mexico City. Which to some people that know Mexico, we are considered to be the trash of Mexico.
Nice. You are a fucking dirtbag.
I am a snatch. Like, people from Mexico City cannot be trusted. People from Mexico City steal. People from Mexico City lie. There's even a saying in Mexico that I found out about it once I came to the United States. I didn't know about any of this when I was living in Mexico City. A friend of mine that is from Tijuana, she's like, you never heard of this? I'm like, heard of what? There's a saying that says, if you want to do your nation a favor, kill someone from Mexico City.
Really?
I'm like, what? It's like, yeah, you never heard of it? I'm like, no, I never have.
Is it just a lot of like drugs and poverty and shit in Mexico City?
You have to remember though, man, being the capital. Anybody from it's like people leaving small towns and going to big cities.
Right.
But they get to big cities. Not many of the people that went to big cities can succeed. So we have to resort to do what they have to do to survive.
Yeah, sure.
That's what it is. So now, even though you were not born in Mexico City, you live in the Mexico City. So now anybody that's there is associated with the city.
You're just from the right. Okay, I got you.
That's where it comes from.
So this is 82, 83?
So I was born in 82.
Okay.
I was born in 82. And then around 86, '87, my dad used to cross back and forth to Mexico, United States. So he tells me stories about him coming across my grandpa, where literally they're walking across, and the media shows up next to them and is like, hey, what ranch are you guys going to? Oh, we're going like 5 miles down. Cool, hop on, I'll take you. He would take that immigration officer would take him to the ranch. Like, cool, I'll see you in 6 months. That's the way it is. It's like, you came to work, now you can go back home. And they would take him to the ranch. They would do their freaking 6 months. Then they go back to the detention center. And then my dad would meet my grandpa again. Then they would go back home.
So did you not get to see your dad a lot? Like, was he always gone just working, sending money home?
I didn't. Yes. My dad would start when my recollection of him, when I can remember my dad being home, he was only home 6 months at a time.
Wow.
Because he used to work in Idaho. He used to work in Idaho at a potato farm.
Really?
Well, when you eat a lot of starch and you're working hard, you build a lot of muscle.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, your dad's a tank, dude. I got to meet him at the reunion. He's a bad motherfucker.
Yeah. So he would leave the United States ripped, fucking pegged, like ripped. Go to Mexico, work construction, whatever, come back to stateside, and the guy be like, what the fuck, man?
What happened to you?
Is there no potatoes in Mexico? What the fuck?
Yeah, you can grow this shit anywhere. You Mexicans can't figure out a fucking potato.
Right? So that was the case. Like, from what I can recall, my dad would work 6 months and 6 months in Mexico and 6 months back.
Yeah, I mean, you got to do what you got to do for your family.
Yeah. So he would send money home. My mom was also working. My mom used to be a secretary for the PGR, which is the police department in Mexico.
Okay.
She used to be a secretary for them. My mom at that time, she had never gone past C sixth grade education.
Wow.
My dad never went past third grade education.
Is that right?
And the reason being, I'm like, yeah. And I told my dad, I'm like, why didn't you go past third grade? It's like I used to move around a lot. My dad made me move around a lot. So my mom, even though I have finished first, second grade, every time I would move to a new school, she thought it'd be wise for me to go back to fucking first grade.
Yeah.
So finally, I'm 10 years old in fucking second grade. I'm like, fuck this shit. Like, so I stopped going to school.
Yeah, I'm 17. Why am I in second grade still?
Exactly. So my dad never went. My dad never made it past fucking third grade.
Okay.
And my mom never made it past sixth grade.
Wow.
Fast forward 40 years, my mom has more education than I do.
I was going to say, she's got master's degrees and shit.
She's about to get her bachelor's. She's about to get her bachelor's next year.
Wow, that's awesome.
In counseling, right? So finally, we're in Mexico City. We live with my parents, with my mom and dad. There's letters, and I think about it now, that I found letters like years later. There should be never a reason why a seven-year-old kid is writing his dad, telling him, can you please send us money because we don't have enough food to eat.
Yeah,
like, there's letters of me, I'm writing down, like, oh, we miss you. Like, thank you for the toys you sent me for Christmas, but we need more money because we need to buy food or we need shoes or whatever.
Wow.
I'm writing those letters.
It was tight, huh? Money?
Yeah, it was tight.
Wow.
Yeah, it was tight. So I got read those letters after I read, I'm like, there should be no reason why a seven-year-old kid should be writing those things, right? Or know about those things.
Yeah.
So finally, around 1990, my mom's like, I'm tired. I'm tired of this life. I'm tired of being a single mom. And she got her fucking cojones, and she's like, I'm out. And we're like, what? She basically left my sisters. I was seven, six or seven at the time. My sister, if I was seven, my sister was six, and my other sister was three. So she left us in Mexico City with my grandma, with her mom, to live there. And she's like, I'm out. We're like, what? I'm going to the United States. We're like, what? I'm going to the United States. And we didn't know how she crossed. We just know she was left. So she left the United States, came to California by herself with another friend. My dad had no clue. She basically, one day, my mom just calls my dad, hey, by the way, you want to see me again? I'm in California. He's like, what? Yeah, I'm not in Mexico. I'm in California. So my dad left Idaho, came to California, so they could start life together here and get everything situated so they can bring us over across. My mom was a housekeeper and babysitter, and my dad was doing landscaping. Like, why do I know? I don't know the language, but I know how to work my hands.
Sure.
And I don't need a language.
You don't need to talk that much.
Exactly. So he never went to construction, even though he was in Mexico, so he ended up doing landscaping.
Yeah.
So fast forward 2 years, we're now been in Mexico City for 2 years without my mom and my dad, with my grandma. Then 1992, around April, my mom comes down to Mexico, and she's like, we're going back to the States. I'm like, I'm a fucking nine-year-old kid. I haven't seen my parents in 2 years. I haven't seen my dad in like 3.5. I'm like, fuck yeah, I get to go to the United States, see my dad, I'm so happy. And we're doing everything in Mexico. We see a situation, we say bye to our family members. And now I remember this. But my mom said that my grandma, my grandma basically said, I'm never gonna see you again. So they knew. You know, they knew, but I was a kid. I
Right. You're not, yeah, you can't comprehend all that.
Hold on. Okay.
You're good, brother.
Yeah, so basically that's what my mom really told me this last year.
Wow.
So yeah, we were talking about it. It's like, yeah, your grandma and your dad's side are your great, it's like my grandma, because I got to meet my great grandma.
Yeah.
She's like, I'm never going to see you again, you know, like, thank you for bringing him, because I know I'm never going to see him again.
Hold on, why? Just because the chances of her, she wasn't planning on going to America, like, good chance that.
Well, because I was not coming here legally. I didn't know this as a kid. I just knew I was going to the United States. I knew I was going to get on the plane. I'm like, yeah, first plane ride, fucking awesome. So I came here. I came here legally, not knowing that I get off of the plane in Tijuana. I'm all happy. My dad's there in the plane, in the airport, I'm hugging him. Oh my God, I'm so happy, you know. And then proceeded to like, okay.
He's like, there's one more part of this trip I need to tell you about.
But wait, there's more.
Yeah, but like, wait, okay, so stand like, by.
So we're walking. Okay, where are we gonna go now? No, we're still in TJ. My dad's like, okay, keep a lookout. I'm like, lookout. Like, yeah, look for a coyote. I'm like, coyote? What the fuck?
El coyote.
The city. What the fuck? El coyote. Look for a coyote. I'm like, why would I see a coyote in the middle of the fucking city?
Yeah.
And by the way, the coyote's wearing a Mexican hat. I'm like, coyotes wear a hat? Like, what the
fuck? How can you put a hat on a dog? Like,
exactly. I'm like, oh, okay. So, not knowing that, the people that don't know this, the Lira Coyote is basically the person you pay to cross illegally to the United States.
Okay, so
hold
on.
So, you found the coyote.
Hold on. Now, you're 10. Your sister, you're almost 10. You're 9.
I'm 9.
Your sister's 8. Your other sister is 5?
6.
Okay.
5 and 6. So, it was my mom because my mom had me when she was 16.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have it when she was 16.
But your parents still don't have green cards and shit, right? They're still illegal.
No,
right?
They do.
Oh,
they
so
do.
They got their stuff they set do. Up. Okay.
So that's what I'm getting to, right? So my dad was crossing back and forth. At first, he was crossing illegally. By 1986, because of the
ICE or immigration, whatever.
Yes, in 86 they had the Bracero program. The Bracero program in 86 allowed people to apply to become a resident.
Okay.
So 1986, 4 years after I was born, my dad became a resident. That's when he continued crossing back and forth legally.
Okay.
So he met us there in Tijuana.
Look out for
it
the coyote.
It was my mom, right? So it was my mom, my two sisters, and myself, and my mom's friend, who she originally who had crossed over 2.5 years before, right? And now she's coming and crossing back with us with a 5-month-old baby girl.
Wow.
Her baby girl. So we get to meet the Kyle, and the guy's a tall, lanky individual. I didn't like him. I'm like, you look shady as fuck, man.
Like, yeah, really, are they like kind of shady characters? Like,
well, yes and no. Like, this guy just gave me it's kind of weird for me to say this. It gave me weird vibes. I don't talk about vibes or fucking
I got you.
Auras and all that. But I didn't like it. There's something about you I don't fucking like. Sure enough, but we're there waiting along the fence line in Tijuana, and out of nowhere, the gates open up. The gates open up, and the freaking immigration, the migra trucks come into Tijuana and start scooping us all up, right? They start scooping us all up. This fucking coyote, the little bitch, has ran away. Never saw him again. So now my sisters, the lady, the baby, my mom, my dad, we're in jail, basically.
Hold on. Let me back you up. So wait a minute. I thought the coyote, like, he had a secret little passageway and he knew kind of like what time, and it was this whole mapped out thing when he was going to cross you over. So what gates are you talking about?
It was like that, but we were basically having to do a recon on where we're going to be crossing that.
Okay. So yeah. He kind of sold you out probably.
Exactly.
Because he already had the money.
He got paid regardless.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, he had some of the money.
So immigration takes you to jail.
So immigration opens up, and nearly like a fucking dog pound, you're shoved in the back of the truck.
Ugh.
And my sisters are crying. Like,
sure.
My sisters are crying. And I'm like, okay, what's going on? You know, like, so we get in there, we go put in jail, and we're behind bars. Then they took my dad out, and they took me out with him. I don't know why. I guess just taking us out. We go to the freaking front counter, and there's an immigration officer behind the counter, basically asking my dad questions. But because my dad was a resident, they thought my dad was a coyote.
They thought
he was the one crossing us. So the immigration officer sees his mica, which before used to be a PIN card. So he sees his residence card, and he proceeds to try and bend it in half so that it would break. And if it breaks, you need to press another one. But if it press another one, well, how did you lose it? Well, you know. So when he went to do that, some way, somehow, it slipped out of his hand. It jumped out. So my dad just freaking got me on the spot, grabbed it, put it back in his wallet.
Yeah.
You know? So now we're in jail for about 6 hours, give or take. And my dad's like, we get out. toss us back. We never even made it across the United States. We're still in Tijuana this whole time.
Right.
Right.
Do you have do you have any clue what kind of money it costs to for that? Like, I know that it's different now, but do you have any? No.
Okay. I asked. My parents said that back in 1992, it used to be $1,000 per person.
So that's 3,000. It was just for you kids, right?
Well, it was 4,000 because my mom was.
Oh, your mom too. Okay, so $4,000. So $4,000's gone. Forget about that.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So
four grand to cross now. If people want to cross now, on the cheap end, and you're paying at least $12,000 per person.
Ahead. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So
and the coyotes, the ones that are taking the biggest risk, they only get paid out of the $12,000, they only get paid $400 per person.
So the rest is cartel money?
Exactly.
Wow.
Or whoever's crossing.
It's cartel.
So I found this out because I've been doing Uber every now and then. I happened to meet a coyote. He told me how much he was getting paid. I'm like,
yeah.
Bro, I want to do it.
Wow.
But so we're in jail. We get released. We're in Tijuana. We call the lady that basically connected us to this coyote. Like, hey, this is what happened. Your fucking guy left us. What a fucking douchebag. It's like, okay. Well, you guys can't stay in hotels. It's too expensive. Go to my house. That was the first time ever I ate at a can. I had never freaking ate a can at all. Like,
really?
Basically, nothing processed. I'm like, what the fuck is this? Like, we're opening cans. I'm like, okay. I have never even had fucking canned fruit before.
Yeah, our frijoles are just regular.
Yeah, right. So my dad's like, I need to leave. I need to go back to work. Because it was Sunday, so wake up Monday. So my dad left us in Mexico.
Hey, Dad.
And I thought,
hey, Dad, just get out of jail. Yeah, hang around for a little while, please. Don't know what we're doing here. Right.
So My I thought we crossed the next day. Talking to my mom about it last year actually. She said, no, we stayed there for 2 days. I'm like, what? We stayed there for 2 days while we were finding another coyote to cross us.
Right.
And while my dad was getting more money to borrow so we can pay the coyote.
Sure.
So finally we get situated. Like, okay, we gotta leave tomorrow. Like, okay, cool. So that's why when I told you guys this story of some of the guys in the Marine Corps, and we're in the middle of Iraq, I'm like, bro, this ain't shit.
Yeah.
My first mission was back in 1992 when I was 9 years old.
Right.
Like, that was my fucking first mission. You know?
Yeah. What do you have with you? Like, what do you guys have with you? Basically, just a change of clothes.
We didn't have any change of clothes at all because everything was sent back with my dad.
Oh, okay. Right. Okay. Okay.
Because my dad was not going to cross with us illegally. He had to literally have the confidence that this guy that he was literally, hey, here's my fucking family.
Yeah, here's my family.
Cross him safely.
And all my money.
Yeah, here's my family. Exactly. Cross him safely. You know? So we wake up around 3-4 o'clock in the morning. We're going out. And as you're walking, my mom has been in the United States for at least 2.5 years already.
Yeah.
She's decked out with American stuff.
Right.
You know, Rocky. Like Nike,
Tommy and Polo. And
whatever.
Yeah.
Exactly. So it actually happened that as we're walking towards where we're gonna meet this guy, we passed by speaking the police over there in Mexicana, they start calling my mom Pocha. A Pocha is a person that lives in the United States but is Mexican.
Okay.
But guess is white. Right? And they thought she was gonna cross us. But so nevertheless, so we got with this guy. The guy was a rugged guy. He was maybe a little taller than you and I, but he was built, right? And we proceeded to, okay, this is what we got to do. We got to jump several fences. He points at me. He's like, you need to jump the fence. I'm like, okay, why are you pointing at me? I know I'm a little pub of lard, but I can still fucking climb a fence.
Yeah.
So we jump several fences. He's like, okay. And he told the lady, he's like, hey, this is a problem though. You have a baby with you. If your baby cries, I'm leaving you. There's no way around it. I'm not leaving you. So what proceeded to happen, we would jump several fences, and every time we come to the fence line, the lady, her name was Minerva, she would jump the fence, and the guy would come to the top of the fence, have the baby, like, hey, catch the daughter. Drop the daughter, she would catch it.
Yeah.
That would happen several times.
I gotta stop you real quick. So these fences, right now everybody pictures this big border fence thing that's ridiculous. Let's not even go there. But anyway, are these just like Because I've been to Tijuana, I don't remember there being like houses with fences. Like, what kind of fences are these? Like government?
Built? We were jump. We were, no. We were not wherever we crossed through. I didn't cross through the desert, so that's one thing.
Okay.
I didn't cross to Texas. I didn't go to the Rio Grande either.
Right, right.
So therefore, that's where they differentiates. I am known as a scratchback. A scratchback is someone that either jumps the fence or goes under the fence. A wetback is someone that runs or crosses and swims across the Rio Grande.
But it is funnier to think of you swimming across the river.
I know.
Okay, so you guys are jumping fences. Go ahead.
There were regular fences, like I think where we crossed several schools. Okay. I don't know where he crossed about.
Okay.
But we didn't cross like along the lines of right there with the big fence that is there now, or the big wall. Because trust me, if we had to, little kids cannot fucking jump the wall. I don't care who you fuck you are.
No.
So yeah, I see where he would get to the top, grab the little girl, the lady would catch her, and we move on to the next thing. Finally, we get to a place where, you know how you guys have your water drains here?
Yeah.
That most homeless end up living in?
You guys, you've been here your whole life. Yeah, I know.
Yes. So yes, it's the same thing. So we have to cross around that. So that's when you handed us bags. Here, put them around your feet. So all the way up to your waistline so you can walk, waddle your way across.
Wow.
So I remember doing that. I'm waddling across and I see him picking up on both my sisters and carrying them across. I'm like, okay, he's looking strong. We get to where we go. Now we're like literally at the edge of the highway and we're hiding. Like, watch out for mosquitoes. I'm like, yeah, I don't want to get bit. He's like, no. I'm like, what do you mean? So he points up to the sky. There were freaking helicopters going around doing the freaking patrolling. That's why I mentioned that was my first mission. I'm hiding from the enemy. This wasn't the enemy. It's just someone that, yes. We're hiding from mosquitoes.
Hey, let me cut in here real quick. Folks that don't know, on the freeways in California, especially down south like San Diego, there are signs, huge, huge yellow signs on the side of the freeway that basically look, it is a family.
It is.
Running. Like,
oh, four.
Okay, so for all of us white people, it's like the deer crossing sign, but it's four people. It's like clearly like a male, female, child, and then little child. And I think like the last child isn't holding anybody's hand or something weird. It's like, don't leave that one behind, you know? But so it's a real thing when you're cruising down the freeway at night to like, watch out. I have never experienced this, but obviously it happens down there. But yeah, to anyone who's never been to Southern California, there are signs on the freeway to basically watch out for people running across the fucking freeway because that's how they got to get there.
Yeah.
It's crazy. All right, yeah, so go ahead.
So it's already around maybe 5 o'clock in the morning before daybreak. So we're doing stand two.
Yeah.
we're doing stand two there along the freeway and the helicopters are going around. And then on top of the berm, there's a couple of immigration trucks so we're waiting. Finally, before daybreak, he's like, okay, we got to cross now. That we got to run across this freeway, and it's for people, like you said, people that haven't been to California, each way is four to five lanes.
Right. Yeah. It's a fucking football field.
So that's when I started realizing that. And then I took that into the military. I've always been telling Charlie, basically, I ensure everybody makes it across safely.
Yeah.
You know, I crossed, and that's what I did. We ran across the freeway. I make sure that no one's being left behind. I jumped the first medium and then I ran to the other one. And then we end up in the 7-Eleven. I didn't know what 7-Eleven was, but it was 7-Eleven. And I'm now in there as a kid, 9-year-old kid. I know I'm not dirty, but I feel dirty. I'm like, everybody's looking at me. Everybody knows what I did.
Yeah, right.
Everybody knows where I came from. And like, and then we just got picked up by whoever was paying the coyote. And they brought us over to East County where now we live. So I've been living in these counties since 1992. And people, even in the Marine Corps, when they join the Marine Corps, like, you live in San Diego and you join the Marine Corps? I'm like, yeah. Why? Like, why? I'm like, why'd you live in San Diego? I'm like, I don't know. I guess we got tired of running. I don't fucking know. Yeah. My parents had a freaking place.
Right. Well, and little did you know, everybody else in that 7-Eleven did the same fucking thing you did. It was just a couple years earlier. You know what I mean? But yeah, I mean, that's a weird thing. Like, even as a kid, when you go on a weird little trip with your parents and it's a different place, you feel very out of place and like odd and, you know.
Wow. Yeah, so that was 1992. So I'm only 9 years of age. I come here. I've been working in Mexico City since I was 7. I used to be a street sweeper in Mexico City because we don't have automated sweepers. So I used to be a street sweeper in Mexico City with my grandma. So I used to wake up at 5 in the morning with my grandma, go to work till around 11, then take the shuttle back home, shower, and go to school at nighttime from 2 to 7, 2 to 8.
They had elementary school at night?
Yep.
Really?
Yep. Yeah. So that's the way they have two schedules, morning and afternoon.
Wow.
I forgot the reason. There's a reason behind it, but I forgot the reason why. And I barely found out about it 2 weeks ago. Honestly, I forgot. So coming here, I'm 9 years old. I'm about here about 6 months. And I thought, okay, where can I go work? My dad's like, what? Yeah. Like, where can I go work? It's like, no, kids are not allowed to work.
Yeah, these people don't work like we do.
I'm like, what? Like, no, you're not allowed to go work. I'm like, okay.
So yeah,
I'm
it's against the law. It's mandatory in Mexico City. It's fucking against the law in Estados Unidos.
So then I started working almost 11. When I got here to the United States, I started working almost 11 or 12.
And see, dude, you come here illegally, and then you start breaking the fucking laws, bro. We said you can't work.
Yeah, so I started working at my dad's a day laborer. I didn't know what the fucking day laborer was.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Basically, I never stood at Home Depot. I never did that.
I got you.
I stood at 7-Eleven. So literally, at first I used to go with my dad, right? We'd literally be there at 6 o'clock in the morning, hoping someone would pick me up. Then I started going on my own since I was like 12 or 13. Not realizing at that time that everybody around me is about 5 to 10 years older than me.
Yeah, right.
Right? So every summer and every spring break, that's where I was. Even winter breaks, that's where I was at 7-Eleven waiting. And I account and I tell people this all the time, we were prostitutes.
Yeah.
Like, what? I mean, think about it.
Yeah.
A car rolls up. You got 20 guys surrounding the fucking truck asking, where am I going? What am I doing? How much am I paying? Are you going to buy me lunch? Are you going to bring me back?
Right.
Now, if you're doing it for a period of time, oh, we got to go to the Kohl's at this part of town. Oh, no, I can't go there because I already know the terrain is going to be hazardous work.
Yeah.
I have to get paid more. So, and then you got the one that jumps in. I'll go for free kind of thing. So, literally, we were fucking prostitutes every time a guy would come in. So, and then it made it worse for me. Now, one of the biggest things that my dad taught me was like, hey, work hard, literally.
Sure.
All you do is work hard.
Sure.
Which is a great thing to have.
Yeah.
But not to the point that you're killing your body, you know? But so that time I didn't know any better besides work hard, work hard, work hard. So now I'm 13, 14. I've been here now 5 years. I know how to speak English, even though it might not sound like it right now, you know, because my accent.
Yeah.
So I could communicate with whoever was hiring us. So I'm a 14-year-old kid. Now the 14-year-old kid becomes a foreman, telling the guys that got picked up, hey, we need to do a following, because no one else, even though they were older than me, by 5 or 10 years, they didn't know how to speak English.
Right.
So now I'm a 14-year-old kid telling the guys, hey, you got to do the following. They're like, who the fuck are you? I'm like, well, he told me because he can't tell you guys.
Yeah.
So now I'm in charge of grown men who, for me, I'm just going there. It's not that we needed the money, but I know if I didn't work, I didn't have any money for myself.
Yeah.
Now, if I work, I probably would give half of that to my parents and the other half to myself. But so I'm giving them instructions of what to do, and they're lagging, they're working slow. I'm like, what the hell is going on? Like, their mentality was like, hey, if we work slow, we can have work more than one day.
Just run out and the clock,
Exactly. I didn't get that. It didn't clock into me because for them, this was a survival.
Yeah.
Like, hey, if I don't have to go work, if I have to go out and be a prostitute tomorrow at 6 o'clock in the morning, and if I come here at 8 o'clock in the morning, hey, I'm all for it.
Well, if you get the whole job done today, then we only work and get paid today.
Exactly. So that was their mentality. And that was my mentality was like, hey, get the job done, finish, and let's go.
Right.
Their mentality is like, hey, let's elongate as much as possible. If I can get 2 days out of this, hey, man, that's 2 days of freaking living.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess I can understand both sides of that one, you know?
Yeah. So it surprises me that I never became an alcoholic or a drug addict there.
Right. Right.
Because, like I said, literally their breakfast was freaking nothing but Coronas, as big as Ballena or the big Corona family size.
Yeah.
I would be there at 6 o'clock in the morning. They start selling beer at 7. Everybody's there. That was a breakfast. I'm like, okay.
Wow.
Now, you want some? Like, I'm like, no, I'm good. I'm going to stick my little Twinkie or my fucking...
Yeah, Pop-Tart.
My little, yeah, exactly. I'm like, let me munch on this real fast.
Yeah.
And I talked about it with my mom. Like, let's say last year, like, after I went to therapy and I came back from in December, we talked about a lot of this. And she's like, in what world, in what mind does it make sense to risk your kid's life for a better future? You know, like, you're trying to survive. I get it. But exposing them to the point, like, they could have gotten run over. You could have, it could have fucking gotten taken. Like, what were we thinking?
Yeah, but that shit can happen in any fucking neighborhood around where you know what I mean?
Exactly.
But you're talking about two very different things. Again, you said the word survival a few times, and like, most people have never had to experience that. Like, you know how it is when people say they're hungry. It's like, you're not hungry. You just haven't eaten in 2 fucking hours. You know, there's a big difference in being hungry and actually starving, you know? And so I guess it becomes a point where it's like, well, we have to do what we have to do here. It's not really a choice. It's a lack of options.
Yeah, and so that's a lack of options. Yeah.
But as a parent, to have to make that decision, I can't imagine. I don't want I'm weird about my kids going down to the creek just because there could be some fucking weirdo down there shooting heroin and kill my kids. Probably it won't happen. But what if it did? I mean, but that's a whole different level of, all right, Carlos, be careful, you know, keep your head up, and we'll see you later, hopefully.
Just think about it, man. I was 14 getting in trucks with fucking grown-ass men that were strangers.
Yeah, yeah, dude. I mean, that's a wild place.
Like, think this is the first time ever I'm actually thinking about it. Like, bro, it could have gone really bad real fast.
Absolutely. Fuck. You know? Absolutely.
This is the first time it has ever crossed my mind that I'm like, bro, you were in danger. I'm like, what?
Well,
this is normal.
I don't know, you would know probably, but I don't know if the whole, like, the cartel, you know, the way they were, or the in our lives, the whole brutality of those guys down there and shit, I don't know if that bleeds over into the normal people. Some of those dudes you were riding in a car with could have for sure been a Sicario, and they came over here, blah blah blah. You never fucking know, man. You never know. And like I said, dude, in the best neighborhoods around where I live, you've been here. Some of these neighborhoods around here, these people make a lot of fucking money. There's just as much dope and pedophile shit going on. And I mean, you know, that shit happens fucking everywhere. So
everywhere,
you know,
everywhere.
So how do you go from, all right, so we'll, you know, you go to school, go to high school. How is it that you get, is it called a green card? How do you get to be an American citizen? Because, like, a lot of people, when I tell them this story, I'm like, my fucking bro ran across the fucking highway with his little sisters. They're like, well, then how did he join the Marine Corps? How do you do that? Because you have to be an American citizen, right?
Yes and no. So, okay. So things have changed. And I know I mentioned it to you before. So when I joined the Marine Corps, I already told you why I joined. I joined because I said it was the hardest thing to do. And we can go out about that later on, but
yeah, so we're gonna have to do a part 2, 3, 4, and 5.
Yeah,
we haven't even started.
I know. I'm already talking. I'm freaking your ear off.
This is the least. This is the least I've talked on a podcast. I'll tell you, it's kind of nice. I'll just turn it over to you.
Let's do it. So, before war, before 2001, before 9/11.
Yeah.
In order for you to join the military, you need to be at least a resident.
Okay.
Right? I joined the bullet program before 9/11. I joined right after, like, I graduated in 2000 June, and by 2000 July, I'm like, I'm gonna go to the Marine Corps. I get there, did the ASVAB, and took everything, and I was a recruiter's wet dream.
Sure. Think about it. Me too.
You go in, you're in pretty good shape. You're not a fucking felon. Yeah, no fucking priors.
Yeah.
And you're pretty decently smart. Like, oh, hell yeah, let's freaking sign them up. Right? So I take the ass about everything's good. Like, hey, you did pretty good. I mean, qualify for some pretty good jobs. I'm like, okay. So they start the process, and they're like, okay, all we need now from you is your birth certificate and your social security number.
Yeah, well, let me call my coyote.
So I'm like, here's my social security number, but because I was illegal, my social security number stated this is not valid for work. So my Social Security literally has stamped in the front that said not valid for, valid for work.
Okay.
In order for me to work, I need to have a work permit paired with my Social Security number so that now it's a complete document.
Documentation.
Like, right. Remember, I got, exactly. So I got here in 1992. So I got here in 1992, my mom and my dad, mainly my mom, was proactive. Like, what do I need to do to become a resident?
Right.
It's me and my kids.
Get my kids going.
Exactly. So my spouse and my father was already a resident. So what do I need to do? So I didn't become a resident until 2001 February.
So wow. Literally
it took, 2001 February, because my mom was proactive about it.
Yeah.
Did all the paperwork, did the lawyers and all that. It worked. And my dad was already a resident, but that didn't matter. But because he was a resident, not a citizen, he couldn't claim us. So then we basically needed a, someone that could sponsor us.
Yeah, right.
Basically saying, this family is good to go. They will not be a burden to society. And if they are a burden to society because they're lazy fucks, I'll ensure that I take care of them. That's basically what it means.
Wow.
So we have to find a family, a friend of a family that, one, was well off, that was willing to put their name as a backing for us.
To vouch for you, yeah.
To vouch for us. So we found a lady that we were friends with, and she said, yeah, we have no issues. She was a oceanographer. She was a teacher. They make pretty good money.
Yeah.
That's who literally signed the paper so that we could be here. So then 2001, February, after I was already told no, I became a resident. So then I take the bus to downtown, take my picture, get my temporary resident card, drive the bus back to Ocahon, which is about half an hour. I get in a horn, and I call the recruiter, hey, I'm legal. He's like, what? I'm legal. Cool. Come back down. Go back down. Don't need to retake the ASVAB. I do everything. They're like, okay, the ASVAB score is good. Now let's look at the jobs you qualify. I qualify for a lot of different jobs. I'm like, hey, I want this. Okay, cool. Now that you checked off everything you want, let's look into the prerequisites. I'm like, prerequisite? What the fuck is that?
Yeah, no say.
Well, exactly. They're like, you need to be a citizen. I'm like, oh, okay. So that crossed off a lot of the jobs because since I was not a citizen, I couldn't have security clearance,
right?
So I couldn't, exactly. So I couldn't have those jobs. So I was left with box kicker.
Here we go.
Or infantry.
Or infantry, yeah. So it's grunt so or grunt.
Exactly. What's a box kicker? Oh, you know, that's supply. You get to work inside, and it's just a boring job. You want to go grunt, though. I'm like, grunt? What's a grunt? Man, let me tell you. I'm like, okay, I'm listening. You get to play with guns. You get to be outdoors. What it got me, though, you get every weekend off. Yes, you get every weekend off. I'm like, okay, I'm young. I'm not married. I do have a girlfriend. I don't have kids. Fuck it. Sign me up for grunt.
No shit. That lying motherfucker.
So I was a poolie since February of 2001.
Wow.
And I didn't leave until October of 2001.
That's crazy, dude. I guess I just never really remembered you telling me that part of it. But I thought there had to be some kind of document. Like, I didn't think you could just come here from wherever and sign right up, you know?
No, you have to be at least a resident. Once you're a resident, then you're good. Like, okay. That's why a lot of people from the Philippines come here as residents, and then they join the service.
Okay.
Now, when you and I joined, this was a stipulation. The join the service helps you become a citizen. But when you and I joined before war, you needed to serve at least 3 years in the military in order for them to vouch for you so that you could become a citizen.
Right.
Because most people out in town, they have to wait at least 5 years before they can even apply to be a citizen.
Yeah.
They have to be a good standing citizen for 5 to 10 years before they can even dream of applying to be a citizen.
Well, so the same in the military. You could just sign up and get your citizenship and bail in 2 weeks, you know.
Exactly. So that's what it changed. So
right,
when
right.
you and I joined, you have to do 3 years. But because after the fact that we were going to combat and we went to combat, came back in 2003, they changed.
Oh, they speeded up a little bit.
They did. The regulation changed. The fact that, okay, now if you went to combat one time, we can help you get your citizenship in 3 months.
I hope so. So
that's why in 2003, when I found out about this, I'm like, what do you mean I can become a citizen? Like, yeah. I didn't want to become a citizen. I told Sam, no, I'm not gonna do it. It's fucking stupid. I'm Mexican.
Yeah,
I'm
sure.
Not a fucking American.
Yeah.
I'm Mexican. And then let's just do it, you know. And I don't know how it went about that. I'm like, you know what? Yes, if I become an American citizen, it will open up doors. So I'm like, fuck it, I'll do it.
Right on.
So then I went to the first sergeant, Fourth Sergeant Oldenburg.
Uh-huh.
I remember because I was just talked to him a couple weeks ago. And I'm like, hey, First Sergeant, I was still a part of POC. I'm like, I need to take some time off. Like, excuse me? Like, leave? I'm like, no. I need to make appointments so I can become a U.S. citizen. Like, you're not U.S. citizen? I'm like, no, I'm not. Okay, what do you need from me? Like, well, I need to make appointments, go here, go there, and just go. He's like, okay. He's like, you can do it, but only one condition. I'm like, what? Go around the whole company and find out who's not a U.S. citizen. That way the process with you. Okay, fine. So I told Valencia did it with me. I went around the rest of the company. I got to Cruz. And I'm like, hey, Cruz, man, I'm doing the following. I know you're not a citizen. We're doing this program. And like, all it costs $300. That's it. $300 and the appointments and the test.
So like, hold on. Did you get Gutierrez too?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Unless he was over here.
Yeah, no way that motherfucker was a citizen. he was right out of the fucking mud.
So then I told Cruz, hey, bro, this was going on, $300, and we can be citizens in 3 months. He looks at me, he's like, Gomez, and I'm like, what's up? Fuck no. I'm like, what? No, I'm not going to do it. I'm like, why? You know how much beer I can buy with $300? you comprehend that question.
Fuck like, citizenship.
I'm like, exactly. I was in a drinker, so I'm like, no, I don't know. I was like, yeah, a lot.
A lot.
So no.
Especially as a PFC or a private.
So Cruz barely became a citizen last year.
Good.
Or 2 years ago.
Fuck it.
Yeah.
But he also deployed for his country too. I mean, get the fuck out of here. You do whatever you want, buddy.
Yeah, so then me and Valencia were actually, Valencia was actually very nervous. Now, a lot of people don't know this. Valencia was extremely nervous. Like, bro, Gomez, I won't pass. My English is not good.
Yeah, he just got out of the truck, too.
He's like, there's 100 questions here that I know maybe 2 of them. He's like, I can't read this.
Oh, I'm
like, bro, you'll be fine. He was so nervous. Like, I'm not going to pass, man. I'm not going to pass. And you'll be fine.
He didn't know how to order fucking Burger King, dude.
No kidding.
That motherfucker, he was fresh.
Yeah, we should take a drive out there, man. Literally freaking.
He's not far from me, dude.
We
missed it. Let's just kick his fucking door in.
Right?
Let's do that.
We're going to be the first door we kick down.
Yeah.
So I'm now doing the process. I actually became naturalized. That's what's called become a citizen. I became naturalized February of 2004. And that was me and like about 400 other individuals got sworn in Camp Pendleton by Arnold.
Nice. By who? Arnold?
Because he was the governor of California.
The governor?
Yep.
Nice. I didn't know that. What the fuck?
So at that time, I'm like, okay, cool. That's Arnold Schwarzenegger. Cool. He's a cool dude, whatever. I didn't go around like, let me take a picture with you, whatever. I'm like, okay, I'm a U.S. citizen. Cool, got it. So that's how I became a citizen before deploying.
Wow, that's a great story.
But yeah. So now, thank you. So now, what they do now after we deployed and did everything, they changed the guidelines, which to me didn't make sense at all. I was actually really pissed when I found out about this. What they do now. They literally do it right before you graduate boot camp. You do your boot camp, right? The day before graduation, you have your swearing in ceremony to become a U.S. citizen.
That's so the fleet doesn't have to fuck with all the paperwork. No.
Well, that also, but remember, when we were there in Iraq in 2004, a lot of guys were dying that were not U.S. citizens.
Oh, right, right.
So their families didn't receive any of the benefits.
Oh, okay.
So then now it took me time to think about them. Okay, it makes sense now.
Yeah.
They're not U.S. citizens. makes sense for to make the decisions before leaving the float.
For sure.
In my mind, okay.
Well, if they're going to go potentially get killed for it, their family better, you know, I agree.
Yeah. Which to me, the fact that I had to wait, I got jealous. I'm like, what the fuck? These guys have not proven themselves. Because the whole time in our lives, you and I have felt that we need to prove ourselves to everybody. So I was like, what the fuck? That's not fair.
Yeah.
I had to prove myself. How come they're not proving themselves?
Yeah.
Why are you giving them free pussies stuff when they haven't even... Exactly. That's my mindset. Went.
It's always easier for the next generation. That's the way it's supposed to go, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, which is good. Hey, but now that's the way it goes.
Well, that's cool. I'm glad to hear that part. I didn't know that. Hey, will you tell me on here, and I need to write it down because it's about time. Will you tell me the name of the book that was written about you guys?
The name of the book that was written about us is called No True Glory.
No True Glory.
Yeah.
Do you remember who it's by, or does it matter?
Yes.
Who's it by?
The No True Glory book is by Ben West.
Yes. Ben West.
B-I-N-G.
Oh, Bing. Bing West.
West.
Oh, okay. West. Folks, if, well, you probably don't know. I'm sure you can get it on Amazon or find it somewhere, but it's called No True Glory. It's about a lot of the people that you hear from on this podcast or in that book. I'm not, again, I was not there with those guys at that time. So, but a lot of real American, Mexican American, Guatemalan American, whatever, from all over this fucking world, heroes are in that book. So I'm going to get that. I have told myself I need to do a little bit more reading, but I'm going to get that. It's about time I read about it and had my own copy. Hey man, I gotta get the kids off the bus. This was a good part. This was a good part one, but again, we have not even almost scratched the surface. So you're obligated to come back, and we still have to get into all kinds of stuff. So you gotta
cool,
do,
man.
You have to
whenever
do that.
You can't
say no either, because it's just you're obligated.
I'm obligated. Got it.
Yep. Brother, I appreciate you so much. I love you and miss you every day.
Yeah, you too, bro.
Thanks for coming on here. And I just appreciate you, man, all the time.
Appreciate you too, man.
All right. Hey, stay on the phone real quick. I'm going to sign off and then I'll talk to you.
Got it.
Everybody, thanks for checking us out again. Please get this book. Please check out the Legacy Military Reunions website. If you can donate, like I said, we've got a little video up there now. You can get a glimpse of my stupid ass in some of it. I'm standing there with a backpack on talking to these two other gentlemen. One is Colonel Wagner, which I fucked up on the reunion podcast and called him a major, but I'll take my ass chewing when I have to. But and then you'll just get kind of an idea of what we did on our reunion. So please check that out. If you can donate or do whatever you can, or again, like Leota said, if you need help with about 300 different things, it's on there. So check them out, please. And I will talk to you guys soon. But Gomez will be coming back and we'll be doing a few more hours of this stuff. So thanks for hanging in there with me. I appreciate you as always. And I will talk to you soon. See ya.